Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time for Let's Talk Real Estate, your weekly BS with Barry Sawitz about the current commercial real estate market here in Southern California, as we take a no BS look at both sides of the issues driving the market today with the man who's been on both sides, Barry Sawitz.
Hey, Paul, good morning. We're back here again. We're going to talk some more real estate. I'm Barry Sawitz, president of the Sawitz Company and Sawitz Properties. And in my 30-plus years in the commercial real estate business, I've been on all sides of the deal as both a seller and a buyer, landlord and a tenant, broker and a principal. And I've learned to take a hard look at both sides in finding the best solutions in commercial real estate transactions and try and manage the ebbs and flows of the commercial real estate market. And so we are back here today. Today's topic is industrial real estate, one of my favorite sectors of the market, and certainly in today's environment, one of the hottest markets. Before we get going, I want to do today's shout out to all of our military personnel and everyone who serves this country, today being the anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. We appreciate all of everything that you do to protect us, the police, all of the armed services. So thank you for your efforts. And as always, with me today is Steve Pearson, Executive Vice President, Principal of Daum Commercial Real Estate, one of the stable commercial real estate brokers in Southern California and on the West Coast. Steve, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah. So let's talk real estate. I love it. Industrial. I've been waiting for weeks to talk about this. Every time we have other people on the show and we talk about other segments, it always kind of comes back to, hey, the industrial real estate market is as hot as it could be. And I guess the question is, I want to delve into that today in terms of understanding why and how and where it's going. But in order to do that, I think it's important to take a look back. I mean, you've been in commercial real estate for most of your adult life, and at least 5 or 6 years now, right?
Yeah, times eight.
Yeah. So you've been in Orange County for longer than I have, and you've seen sort of the development and the growth of the market. And we were talking about it earlier. Orange County started out as orange groves, right? And it was agricultural land, and over time started to develop into an area where it was mostly industrial. It was not an office hub. It was not a housing hub. It was a sort of stopping point between LA and San Diego once upon a time.
That's right. I used to work with my dad. He was in construction in the early 70s. And that was the days when Collins Radio, you know, was one of the big tenants down in the what was then called the Irvine Industrial Complex, which is now the IBC.
Yeah.
That was back in the day when land around the airport was a buck a foot.
Yeah, I mean, they were giving it away in today's standards.
Yeah, now it's more like 150 a foot.
And so you have, at least around the airport area, so as time went on, those buildings got developed in the IBC. In today's world, a lot of those buildings are what you'd call older, obsolete kind of buildings with lower ceiling height. Not the kind of amenities that people need in today's environment for doing what they need to do industrial-wise. And so, you know, what has happened over time in terms of the development of industrial space in Orange County? I mean, we've seen it grow in North County. We've seen it grow down in the spectrum. And so what is happening today in the airport area as far as those older buildings go?
Well, the IBC has gone through a couple of changes over the last 20, 30 years. You know, first, the low-ceiling, 18-foot clear industrial buildings that were built in the 70s, they started getting more valuable, and there were more companies that wanted to put more people in them, so the developers started slicing off pieces of the building, adding mezzanines to it, more parking, and made them into flex-tech-type buildings. Then office started catching on. More companies from L.A. started wanting to position down around the Orange County Airport. So a lot of those industrial buildings got torn down for office buildings. And then here 10 years ago, the office buildings are in less favor because they'd overbuilt them. But we were still short on housing. You know, so the apartment developers come in and buy out the properties, or many of the properties, and start building apartment properties.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the industrial historically has had waves of going in and out of favor. I remember, you know, not that long ago, a few years back, they were taking the industrial buildings and converting them into what we'd call, you know, creative office, where they basically just polish up the floors and have the high ceiling, and the tech and the millennial type companies kind of like that space. And they were actually charging a premium over regular office space, which was boggling my mind that somebody would pay the premium, and then it was two or three times what it used to rent for as industrial space.
Right, right. Well, and now we're seeing developers looking to the logistics side of things and bringing buildings in for companies like Amazon. In fact, there's a recent land sale there on Jamboree, right next to the Boardwalk office property. It was supposed to be a kind of a new wave hotel development. And I think it was Black Creek that just bought it at $142 a square foot land value. And they're going to supposedly build Hi-Cube industrial distribution on it.
It's interesting. And so the hotel's not going forward. I mean, they still have the sign up. I just drove by it yesterday.
No, as of this last week, supposedly the plan is to go for last mile distribution.
Huh. Interesting. Right in the heart of Jamboree and the corridor between the 405 and Fashion Island.
Yeah, but remember what 30, 40 years ago used to be loaded with sewing machines when, you know, we had a garment manufacturer there right next door.
That's true. With St. John Knits.
Right.
And I bought some land from St. John Knits, and I think we paid $10 a foot back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I think today it's probably $150 a foot.
Right.
So that's what happens. So let's talk about the industrial market from a leasing perspective. I want to talk from the – we'll start with the tenant side of the perspective. So if you're a tenant and you want to go, let's just say, lease or buy industrial space in Orange County, how tough is it in today's market? On a scale of 1 to 10 –
11.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. 11, yeah, right? 11. I mean, it is tough goings. Right.
Well,
so
yeah, it is. The the vacancies are almost nil. I think they're 1 to 2% in most parts of Orange County. There is a new construction going on where developers have come in and torn down old structures and are building new. In fact, many of those aren't even priced because there's been such an inflation in lease values in industrial properties, particularly in Orange County, that I think the developers figure they're not going to put a price on it until they have a CO, until a certificate of occupancy, and they're ready to take on a tenant.
Or I guess, you know, my favorite rental rate of all, they say, well, what's the – people always ask me, well, what's the market for this? And I say, well, it's the most popular rent there is. It's called withheld. Right. And so they don't give you the rate until you tell them that you like the building and who you are. And then there's a range of what I was thinking, and I'll give you a number once you tell me you like it.
If you were a developer, would you do it any differently? I mean, we've got inflation at, 6% right now nationally. And I would argue in the real estate side of things, industrially, it's probably in the mid-teens on annual inflation.
And what you're seeing, I'm curious your take on it, but at least what we're seeing on our brokerage side of things is each deal is more expensive than the last deal. And so if pick a number. If the rent was $1 a square foot, tomorrow's rent is $1.05. And it's not slow moving, and there's really no rhyme or reason to it. And part of it is just testing the market because there really is nothing to compete with or compare to. And it's really just a function of how badly somebody needs the space and what they'll pay. Are you seeing that out in the trenches with your guys?
Yes, for the most part, it's supply demand, it's labor location, and it's where that particular user has to go for its product, and where its employees live. I mean, if that's tied him into Orange County, he's going to pay whatever he has to pay to stay in Orange County. Now there are more and more taking looks outside. Used to be you could almost save half by going into the Inland Empire, but then you pick up a commute, but maybe you're closer to your employment base. But now those prices have gone up quite a bit. We're seeing 80, 90 cent rents on industrial boxes in the Inland Empire versus a buck and a quarter, buck and a half rents. These are monthly per square foot in Orange County.
And even more than that in Los Angeles.
Right.
I agree with you 100%. And then the issue, too, is that if I'm a tenant and I have yesterday's rent where I signed a lease 5 years ago and that lease is now coming up, 5 years ago, I might have signed a lease at 60 or 70 cents a square foot. And that lease would have had some annual increase that went up, percentage-wise each year. But today, at the end of my lease, I might be at 75 cents a square foot. And now you're telling me the Inland Empire is 80 or 90. Or if I want to stay put where I'm at, I'm going to pay $1 to $1.50, depending upon where the market is. And so either way I'm looking at a price increase, either way I'm looking at a hit to my bottom line, and then to downgrade to go to an inferior location where my employees have to drive, I have to drive, somebody has to deal with traffic, I have inefficiencies, and I have to move, and I have the disruption of it, I'm paying more money and getting less, or I'm paying even more money and just stand put.
All of that's true, but remember, we're in a high demand for employees right now. I mean, COVID kind of knocked the blocks off of a steady job growth out there. And it's changed the rules on who works from home and who works back in the office. And industrially, a lot of particularly the manufacturers in Orange County, very concerned that if they relocated outside of their current area, that they would lose the attractiveness of the engineers or of the welders or of the, you know, the technically trained employees that they have. And remember, typically facilities cost, you know, roughly 5% of the overall expenses for a company. And I think we've probably they're going to have to do the math. They're going to say, okay, if I'm going to grow, do I take those risks of making the change to get a larger space to pay more rent to get more business? You know, am I going to get more business out of that? Or am I turning away business?
Well, and certainly from the manufacturer standpoint, I can't afford to be down, right? I can't afford. Right. I'm already backed up in many cases with COVID and supply chain issues. I agree. I mean, we hear it all the time, which is, hey, there's no way I can move. And so then your fallback is to, well, then I guess you're just going to have to pay whatever the best deal is you can negotiate for yourself and stay put.
Which is part of the reason many tenants have looked very hard at buying properties. And yet when they look at $350, $400 a foot on the asking price, it's a big gulp. And they say, geez, you know, I remember brokers used to tell us it was $100, $150 a foot.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that was 10 years ago.
Right. And it's all a correlation of what is my rent versus what would my mortgage be. And with interest rates as low as they are, it would be worth it for somebody to go buy the building, get a cheap mortgage, lock it in, and they'd be paying the same or in some instances less than what they'd be paying in rent. And so we hear that all the time on our side of it. Hey, I want to buy a building, right? And then the issue becomes once they go look and see what the prices are and they realize, geez, that's a lot of money, they go back to, okay, I guess I'll just lease. Mm-hmm. And so that again creates more demand for the very limited product that is out there.
Well, remember, we've also got uncertainty from a tax structure. People don't really know, or, you know, the businessman doesn't really know yet how he's going to get hit by these new administration, you know, tax policies. Whatever gets passed, it's still an arm wrestling contest out there. But, you know, that'll have an impact on whether someone leases or someone buys. Tax structures usually have a way of turning the herd. You know,
yeah.
I think it certainly did in 17 when there were a lot of incentives to go out and do it. But it also did, I'm old enough to remember the 81 Tax Act, which basically said, hey, go out and build anything you want to build, and we're with you.
Right.
And then in 86, they said, nah, we got a little carried away, so guess what?
But the SBA loan today, if you want to buy a building, whether it's industrial or office or whatever, is the best deal around. I mean, you come up
yes.
with 10% down, and then you can finance basically the rest of it, including your improvements. So if you can find a building that you can actually make a deal on and not get outbid or that works for you, then to me, that's the best way to go. The other interesting thing when you bring up the tax structure, not to digress, but there's talk of reassessing commercial properties and not having the Prop 13 and basically raising it to market. And in, it used to be in the industrial market, you had two types of rental rates. You had a triple net rate and you had a gross rate. And a gross rate, the landlord paid the taxes. And in a triple net scenario, the tenant was paying everything. In today's market, I would say probably 99% of those leases are triple net. Is that a safe assessment in terms of landlords just passing those costs back on to the tenants?
Yeah, it depends on whether it's multi-tenant or a single-tenant type building. But remember, even in the gross lease, there's a pass-through when it escalates.
True. And so if you take away that Prop 13, what that basically means to the guy or the gal who is renting,
right,
that the landlord is going to get his taxes raised by the government, and the landlord is just going to pass it right back through to you. No different than if the landlord sold the property tomorrow at a really expensive price, based on your rent or other tenants' rents in the project, and then cashed out, and then the new person comes along and says, here's the new tax price, your rent just went up.
Right.
And these are real concerns for every tenant out there who is renting space, that if the property trades or if the tax laws change, my rent's just going to go up and I can't do anything about it.
And then you have those 100 ships that are sitting offshore.
Sure, with all my holiday presents on them, right, and everybody else's. And so you add to those kinds of things, and it makes it very difficult. So when you're a tenant, so back to the tenant side of things, let's talk about term of lease for a second, and I want to talk about both sides. Number one, on the tenant side, my one logic would be, hey, I have all this uncertainty. The market is hot. Maybe I should just do a short-term lease and the market will cool off and I can make a better deal later on. From the landlord's perspective, he might also think he wants to do a short-term lease because if he believes the market is going to continue to increase, then he would come back and get another bite at the apple and raise it even more. Are you seeing more leases structured in the short term, or is the landlord saying, no, I'm only going to do a long-term lease because I know the market's hot and I just want to lock it in and be done?
We're seeing really both. I think on some of the smaller buildings, you know, the 5 to 20,000 square foot buildings, 3 to 5 years is still kind of the average, you know, lease term. But on some of the larger spaces, we're certainly seeing 10 and in some cases 20-year leases because, you know, the limited supply of space. And tenant, particularly if in the logistics business, is very aggressive and wants to make sure that they've got a home for many years to come.
Well, and think about it. If I signed a 10-year lease 5 years ago versus the 5-year lease,
right,
my lease would be coming up and I'd be getting a 30, 40, 50% increase in rent. Versus had I just locked it in, I would have been getting a 2 or 3% increase and would be much happier with that. But who knew, right? Hindsight's 50-50.
Right.
So on the investment side of things, if I want to go buy a building as an owner user, or I want to buy a building as an investor, equally as difficult as if I'm a tenant. True?
Yes. Yes, it is. Investors, when we can find a building for them, you know, are in the are willing to take between a 3.5 and 4.5 cap on the income on the property, and you know, we've seen prices on those buildings that an investor would buy be in the $300 to $400 a square foot price range,
which in some instances is more than an office building.
Actually, yes, you're right, because you're seeing office buildings trade in the $300 to $400 category. But remember, an office building has a great deal more CapEx in it. Every time you turn over a tenant, you've got, what's tenant improvement today? $100, $150 a square foot to
right.
build out?
If you can even get the materials off the ship that's out in the sea.
Yeah, it'd take
right.
you 12 to 18 months to, you know, get the materials to do it.
Right.
So.
And the other thing is, I mean, rents in office space are obviously more per square foot just on the face. Maybe it's $2 versus $1. It sounds like the office rent is double. Sounds like, gee, an office building should be worth more. But in office rent, for those listeners and viewers out there that don't understand typical structure of rents, in an office rent, normally you would pay one rent, and that would include the taxes and all the other expenses. The landlord then has to pay all of those expenses. So his net rent, if he was getting $2, he might only be getting $1. Versus in industrial, if I pass those costs on to the tenant, then the rent is really goes in my pocket or pays the mortgage or combination of the two. It might work out to the same, which gets right. back to why it might cost the same to buy it at the end of the day.
Right. Well, I've seen several office buildings over the last 10 years trade for less than what they sold for 10 years ago. So
yeah.
I'm sure there's an analyst a lot smarter than me that has figured out a way that fits in the portfolio, and they're going to make money on it.
But if somebody asked you, hey, industrial buildings will trade at a 3 cap or 3.5 cap a couple of years ago, or even a year ago in the middle of COVID when everything was locked down, you'd probably tell them you're crazy.
Yeah, and that's – we've – so far I've only seen that out in the Inland Empire with the larger, you know, 34 to 40-foot clear industrial new stuff or new product with good long-term leases in it. But, that was, again, my age. When I got started in 76, the fulcrum or the midpoint on cap rates was 9%.
Yeah.
course, we also had prime at 18 a few years after that. So, you know, that inflation thing, it's something to be taken seriously.
Well, and I don't want to date you, but back in those days, the Inland Empire just smelled like a farm, right? I mean, you would drive out there on a hot day and you couldn't get out of the car without getting knocked over by the smell, because it was really just farmland. And you look at the Inland Empire today, and to me, that market, as good as it is along the coast, the Inland Empire benefits from everything going on along the coast industrial-wise, and has shot up just dramatically.
And there are a lot of wealthy, comfortable dairy farmers.
Yes, for sure. So. That aren't really farming anymore. They're just relaxing.
Managing their money.
Yes, correct. So let's talk about Inland Empire and LA and Orange County, because they relate together. And Dom, you guys have, you know, 10 brokerage offices throughout the West Coast, including Arizona. You have 150 plus brokers that are actively in the trenches that are working it. And so you guys have a very good pulse in terms of what's going on. But there is a correlation between these different markets. And I guess I wanted you to talk about that, because as it gets more expensive for real estate closer to the ports in Los Angeles, what does that do for Inland Empire, and what does that do for Orange County going forward?
Well, it really comes down to logistics and location. You know, clearly the older industrial product in Los Angeles, you know, dates back, you know, geez, I don't know, 50, 100 years, a long time, because that's where the population was. And as it started expanding down into Orange County and then out into Inland Empire, they were, you know, seeking available land and value where they could expand their operations. So the product that comes in through the ports. Ports have been really, the L.A. Long Beach ports have been key to much of Southern California's industrial growth.
Yeah, for sure.
So right now we've got, I don't know, the last count I read was 100 ships sitting offshore that can't unload. I've been told by logistics experts that's because, you know, China has been working 24/7 for a long time, and is much more efficient in putting product out on barges and shipping them over
than we are in terms of getting it off.
We are in terms of getting them off. And you know, the supply chain is a complex system that is going to require more than just asking workers or telling workers to work 24/7. It's going to require truck issues. It's going to require container issues, chassis issues, all the things that move around, plus trains. I mean, they finished, the Alameda Corridor, is that going back 20 years now? It's been a long time that it's been in there, but that's probably still not sufficient to move the amount of cargo that's coming in through the, you know, through the ports. So back to your question on L.A. versus Orange County versus Inland Empire, I think the closer the proximity to the ports, the better the value, because of access and timing of product. You know, we're going to, back in the mid to late 70s, everything, the discussion was all about just in time, okay? Manufacturers were going to get product in just in time to then put the next piece together and get it out and ship it, so you don't have to store a bunch of stuff in your warehouse.
Right.
Well, with COVID, now we've gone to what they call just in case. So they're having to put more product in warehouses just in case there's another delay on the logistics chain. So that's, again, part of the boom to this last mile distribution, you know, building of these $300-$400 a square foot logistics buildings.
And you're just back to, if I as a user have to pay more in rent, I will just pass it on to the consumer in some way, shape, or form. I have to at the end of the day. I can't just eat the additional cost of the rent or the occupancy costs or the cost to get that product out in the market, which is why you're back to inflation. You see prices increasing across the board. What I tell you is that we just have a quick minute left, and you and I could talk all day, I think, and still not be bored. But in terms of where you see the industrial markets going forward over the next 12 months, while no one has a crystal ball, what is the general prognosis? Does it level off at some point? Does it continue to go up? Where do you see it, and what are you guys telling the folks that you're dealing with?
Well, that is a wild card question, because you've got several elements that are undefined right now. You have the logistics backup that I was referencing earlier. how do you resolve that, or can we get all of those components to the chain moving forward again? You have midterm elections coming up.
True.
So as far as political issues getting passed or not passed, there's going to be a lot of arm wrestling that goes on about that, including the tax issues. Most of what I am hearing from the economist, and I'm not an economist, I'm just a broker that tries to, help building owners and tenants. Most of what I hear is we're probably in for a 2022 similar to 2021, limited supply, rising prices. Some of that's going to depend on what Powell does with interest rates.
Yeah. You know,
does he do the quantitative easing, start backing off of that? And go into, starting raising interest rates by a quarter point. And, it would be difficult. It is difficult for me as a non-economist to answer that question directly. But I think all of those components play into that answer.
For sure. And then you're still back to the simple math of supply and demand.
Right.
And if there is no supply, prices theoretically would go up. And even if they don't go up, I'm just going to have a tough time finding space, period. And that, I think, is the challenge that we're living with today. And at least from our perspective, I'm curious your thought. I think that's going to continue.
Well, and there's one more wild card we haven't talked about, and that's technology. I mean, we have labor issues right now, but every time costs get up, technology comes in and eliminates jobs.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking
we may save that for another show. That's a whole other thing. But I'll tell you what, I think we're going to leave it there. I think on the industrial side of things, if you need space and you are a tenant, you need to get out there and you need to make it happen, and you're going to have a difficult time, and you need to understand that. You just need to take the cards that you're dealt with. If you own industrial buildings and you are an owner or investor of industrial buildings, you'll be doing pretty well here for the short term. It's always interesting to talk about the dynamics of the market and how the overall economy plays into it. Steve, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your thoughts and your insights and your history in doing this. It's been a pleasure.
Well, it's been a pleasure sharing those with you, Barry, and hopefully those people that need things will call one of the two of us.
Yes, and so much continued success to you and your company, and all the best for happy holidays and a prosperous new year. I want to thank our producer, Sophia. I want to thank our announcer, Paul Roberts, and the entire team here at OC Radio. I am Barry Saywitz, president of the Saywitz Company, and we will be back here next week talking more real estate. Thank you for listening in. Happy early holidays, and we'll see you soon.
You have it. You've been listening to Let's Talk Real Estate, your weekly BS with Barry Saywitz about the current state of the real commercial real estate market right here in Southern California. On Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studio here at the University of California Irvine's Beal Applied Innovation Center.